Innocence. The child is waiting when I arrive for my morning shift in the emergency department. The nurses have kept her for me, shooing other clinicians away. The child, they say, needs someone like me to care for her. Somebody gentle, experienced, female. Mostly someone female. Her chart reads sexual assault. The girl is 8. She has injuries. The nurses are bristling, and the security guard keeps reaching protectively for his gun. In the room, I find her parents. The father sits silently, his body motionless and taut, ready to pounce. I can't read his expression. His eyes are small black stars, distant and indeterminate. The mother is in pink fleece pajama pants, her blue t-shirt whitened in places by toothpaste. Probably from the night before. The night before. The child sits up in bed covered by a white sheet. Her copper hair spills and waves down her back, and dark shadows circle her eyes. I think she is still so young. She is 8. 8. An age when the riskiest venture should be passing notes folded into triangles in class, when the character on your lunchbox matters. When the dangerous boys are the ones who trip you on the playground. Pulling up a stool to the edge of the bed, I start with, hello. It seems simplest. I'm Alexandra, I say. I'm here to help you. Can we talk? She glances at her mother, who nods, and back at me. Yes. I ask if she wants both her parents in the room. Her choice. Yes, I say. It's your choice. You make the decisions now. She asks for her daddy to leave. He nods, gets up, and leaves without a murmur. The days of shared ice cream cones, blowing bubbles in bath water and turning cartwheels in the sun are over. A foundation of love, trust, and comfort gone, perhaps forever. I ask her what happened. She tells me she was sleeping on the couch at her aunt's house when her uncle came downstairs. She was watching Frozen, but she fell asleep. Fell asleep over chocolate milk and goldfish crackers and drifted off to visions of snowmen. She shivers, tears fall. Her uncle kissed her and touched her and broke her. He stole her there in a lonely room on the couch. I clench my hands and release them. I need to examine her. I speak with the same nurse. I want to be certain. Medicine first. Evidence next, she says. Her mother holds her hand as I give her a pain blocker. I clean and suture. I'm worried that I will do harm. The uncle has confessed and is in custody already. Still, I imagine the evidence washed away, the uncle recanting, me being responsible for this child not seeing justice. Justice. I wonder where the father has gone and whether he has a gun. I think about the uncle in custody and his life story. What drove him to this? Had there been others? Will he live with regret? Has he found his truth? I play 16 tiny sutures. We talk as I make the throws and pick up the threads. She tells me she loves sweatpants, cheer wine, and cookies with sprinkles and creamy frosting. I tell her I love angels, notebooks with blank pages, and the smell of new cars. She says she's addicted to Sour Patch Kids and the first snows of winter. She wrinkles her forehead and sighs. I think maybe she doesn't want to build a snowman anymore. I give her Tylenol and an ice pack. I hand her mother instructions about wound care. Her mother wraps her in a Tinkerbell blanket and carries her out. The sane nurse is expecting her. I wish she needn't go through any more. I know she will, though, even when the evidence has been collected and the medications given. Even when the case has been tried and the final documents sealed. When the people all around her are no longer gentle or experienced, no longer bristling on her behalf, security no longer reaching protectively for a gun. When her past has become a small black star. Distant and indeterminate.